Welcome to the RCGP podcast. My name's Dr. Thomas Round. I'm one of the e-learning fellows. And today I have the real pleasure of speaking to Dr. Stephanie DiGiorgio, who is a portfolio GP with an interest in obesity. Good morning, Steph.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Great to have you. Just a little bit of background, Steph. You've been interested in obesity for a few years now, if that's right.
Yeah, I have. Probably about 8 years now. And I realised that there wasn't really a huge amount at the time about obesity out and about. And so I made that one of the areas I wanted to study and learn. And now the landscape couldn't be more different because everybody's talking about it all the time. So it's really lovely to have an area that is very important and that people didn't know huge amounts about because the science is so new, to suddenly be the topic of the moment. So it's great.
Well, great to have you. And of course, we could have a whole podcast or even hours of learning on obesity. And I would signpost people to college website and we will touch a little bit on that. But the main focus for today will be talking about the new, what we might call wonder drugs, which everyone's talking about, the GLP-1 receptor agonists and the similar drugs to those, which obviously causing a lot of press and a lot of interest at the moment.
Absolutely. They are everywhere.
So really today we're touching a little bit about these drugs, what they might mean. How do we navigate this as a GP, touching a little bit on obesity and then maybe future directions in this area? Just Steph, a little bit about these medications. Obviously, people who are GPs listening will be quite used to some of these drugs in diabetes management.
Absolutely. And I think the GLP-1s have been around for a while and people were getting their heads around using them. And then we had the SGLT2s and then they came in and then they were the flavour of the month for diabetes type 2. And I think GLP-1s kind of got pushed aside a little. But then obesity became a topic that everyone wanted to know about. And so GLP-1s suddenly started to be talked about everywhere. I think the really important thing to know is that they are being taken by hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people in this country privately, and their GP may not even know. So we'll talk about that a bit later, but yes. I think these drugs are being very widely used and they are turning out to be very, very important in many ways, but interestingly, not necessarily prescribed on the NHS very often at the moment. So they can be brilliant, but we need to think about who might be on them.
Exactly. And so you touched on semaglutide and everything as people talk about the brand name. So Ozempic, Wegovy, and then the new one, Mounjaro, which is, if I can pronounce this right, tirzepatide.
Tirzepatide, exactly. And tirzepatide is a GLP plus, so to speak. It has other activities as well. So the GLP-1s themselves are, at the moment, are just semaglutide. And yes, everyone talks about Ozempic, which is actually semaglutide for diabetes, or Wegovy for semaglutide for obesity. And tirzepatide is Mounjaro or Zepbound, depending upon which you decide to use.
There's a lot of trials now coming out, and I should just headline, we had a recent hot topic where we looked at some of the systematic reviews in this area. So obviously good quality trial evidence that these drugs do work for significant weight loss.
Yeah, absolutely. With semaglutide, we're talking probably about 16 to 17% weight loss. Tirzepatide, which is a dual GIP and GLP-1. It depends on the studies, but you're talking about sort of 17 to 22% weight loss, which is similar overall to a gastric sleeve, not quite as much as a gastric bypass. So these are drugs that are really helpful. They are game changing, in fact, I would say, and they really do work in the doses for obesity. And the trial data that's out there, originally the trial data was mostly drug company trial data, but now we have really good studies that are more independent studies, and they are definitely showing that these figures can be reproduced in the real world. Sometimes they're not, sometimes it's not as much, but they are proving to be incredibly life-changing for some people.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So obviously we have the drug company sponsored randomized control trials, but then we do have large scale primary care database studies in the real world showing the effectiveness of these drugs. And then obviously there's a lot of interest that they're developed for diabetes and reduction in HbA1c, but showing this big weight loss, including people not diabetic, but also they seem to have some other benefits I've seen headlined in some of the press.
They really do. And I think this is where things are going to change. So tirzepatide has been proved for the use for sleep apnea now in the States, not here yet. And semaglutide has been shown to be very good at improving quality of life for heart failure. And there is independent evidence that they are good for cardiovascular disease. And that's fascinatingly independent of any weight loss that that person might have. And it seems to be that these drugs, they have a very significant anti-inflammatory effect. And it seems to be something about the the way that they behave with regards to potentially endothelium, but we haven't really got all the way dug down into the science yet. They are potentially preventing cardiovascular disease independent of weight loss. So if you've got the weight loss, which does happen, and of course it gets rid of that visceral fat, which is the dangerous fat for cardiovascular disease, then you have a bit of a win-win situation going on. And we haven't had huge amounts of evidence for the heart failure yet, often because heart failure tends to be in the more elderly population. And so trials in that population are obviously sometimes a little bit more difficult, but the ones that have been done, it does improve quality of life quite significantly. So I think we are at the early stages of realizing that these drugs might be incredibly helpful. The one other thing that's a bit weird is they seem to be helpful for people who abuse alcohol, so to stop people wanting to drink alcohol, and gambling as well. So I think that we are learning. This is why I love being in this sort of sphere, because there haven't been that many things I feel in my career, but it feels like real new science and new things that we're discovering. And I think it's fascinating. I love it. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And I even saw a study in The Lancet. It showed it was patients with obesity without diabetes who had knee arthritis, and showed that patients got a real benefit also for their arthritis from using these medications.
I think that's both partly because of, obviously, if you're reducing body mass, then the amount on the joints is less, but also that anti-inflammatory effect seems to be playing a part in that.
Absolutely. But of course, all medications have side effects. You know, we're used to the number needed to treat and the number needed to harm. And we've got to weigh that up with the patient. So obviously, we will know some of the common GI side effects for some of these medications.
Absolutely. And I think that the main things are GI side effects. Obviously, this is working on the gut-brain axis. And so the gut is the bit that's affected. So some people find that they get a little bit of almost like a little gastroparesis. So things are just slower to empty. That's actually why it works. It stops you being so hungry. But if that becomes problematic, then obviously that can be unpleasant. It's also some people get nausea, vomiting, and some people weirdly get diarrhea. Some people get constipation. We all know people are different, and that's what we get. There are obviously rarer side effects. Now, there was initially a link to potential suicidal ideation. That luckily has been shown not to be the case anymore. There is potentially risks for pancreatitis and also gallstones, which may or may not therefore be related to the pancreatitis, although it's not always gallstone pancreatitis. But gallstones can form from rapid weight loss with anything. So it's a bit tricky to know whether that's a drug class effect or just a weight loss effect. And then the one that's been in the press lately is more the non-arteritic anterior ischemic optic neuropathy. And that can be an issue. It's probably about 2 per 100,000-ish. But it's so rare. It's one of those ones that's really hard to do decent studies because you don't know how rare it's going to be. It's so rare. There aren't big enough numbers. So whenever, you know, I talk to people on the medications, what I always say is if you're getting severe abdominal pains, if your eyes suddenly go fuzzy, if something weird happens, then go and talk to somebody, ideally the prescriber, but we'll talk about why that can't always happen, and get help. But please tell them that you're on the medications, because unfortunately that doesn't always happen.
And as we've said, we've had some of these drugs for quite a few years now. So we have, I guess, got fairly good data. And then obviously primary care data, we've got, you know, sort of hundreds of thousands of people or in millions worldwide using these medications. So obviously we're keeping an eye out for any future signals or any other harms associated with these medications.
Absolutely. And for me, one of the sad things is that because it's all being prescribed in the UK, predominantly on private market, no one is really collating this data. I don't think that people will be filling in yellow cards, and because how people are accessing help if they're getting it privately, it can be really difficult. So I think that we're actually at the moment, we have a big missed opportunity for collecting that data. But at the same time, luckily so far, as you say, millions worldwide, we're not seeing anything disastrous come up. And we, as you say, 20 years of these drugs, hopefully for most of them, we would have ended up with knowing a little bit more about it. But the other thing, as you say, is that it's a risk benefit effect. And moving through the world with significant obesity is not a risk-free situation. And so when you're prescribing any medication, it's always a risk benefit. And so I think it's really important that we keep our scientific heads on and think about risk versus benefits and remember the risks of living with obesity and the benefits of these drugs.
Obviously, we'll touch a little bit about our role on obesity. The NICE guidelines have recently changed. Obviously, we're sort of digesting that. It's likely we will have some updated RCGP e-learning, so watch this space. But yeah, just to briefly touch on the GP role in obesity, where we sort of fit in.
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. So At the moment, until the NICE guidelines came out on the 14th, GPs could not and were not recommended to prescribe semaglutide, which was the one that we had around, olaraglutide. Now, the NICE guidelines have come down on the side of GPs being able to prescribe tirzepatide. And it's there in black and white in the NICE guidelines, and tirzepatide for obesity. But there is a huge issue, and GPs have been asked to hold back on doing that for now and to refer to weight loss services. However, weight management services in the UK have been cut. 50% before they were cut of patients didn't have access, and now it's even less because quite a few of them have been shut down. So we are in a very difficult situation, and I feel this deeply as a GP, that we have a drug that we are told we could prescribe at the same time as being told we shouldn't prescribe it, and that's incredibly difficult. And what I'm hoping is that very quickly ICBs, NHS England will start to put together some sort of perhaps community hub situation where people can get the medications. NHS England at the moment have said they're going to do a rollout program.
Absolutely. That's a really well put about the sort of navigating the complexity there. And around, absolutely, patients need that support around, you know, lifestyle, diet, all those different tiers, along with then going onto the medication. I'm slightly worried about people just going straight to the medication without having any of that extra support.
That has been a very interesting point of discussion recently amongst people with an interest in obesity, because what we have is millions around the world of people who have done exactly that, and hundreds of thousands of people who've done exactly that in the UK. Because although these medications by some private prescribers do come with assistance, many, many others don't. They just take your credit card and post you the drugs. And we haven't had that many people struggle or come a cropper from that. I think there will be people who do need quite significant psychological support, because we know obesity is related to a vast number of psychological issues. And so there will be people who need that psychological support. There will be people who need support because perhaps they have a binge eating disorder. There'll be people who do need support with what food they should be eating. So they need a dietetic type of support. And there might be people who need some support with learning how to move sensibly again. And we know that with medications, it's really important to do weight bearing exercise to keep your lean muscle mass up.
Really good discussion. And I think, like you say, it's navigating that nuance. For some people, it will be very helpful. But for other people who are very activated in their health, might not be. It's that kind of individualizing it to the person, I think.
Absolutely. I think that's true. I think it's like many obesity interventions. So people who have bariatric metabolic surgery, not all of them need constant multidisciplinary help afterwards. Some do, some don't. And so I think that we need to be more open to the fact that not everyone needs it. And why we think everyone needs it is a whole other ethical and moral discussion. But I think that whatever system we set up, there needs to be some element of that for the people who need it, and for that to be good quality, evidence-based, available treatment.
We absolutely said lots of people buying this privately. I think the last stats I saw were hundreds of thousands, if not half a million people in the UK buying these medications privately. Yep. As a GP, I guess we could see someone with who has side effects who maybe doesn't have that medical support.
Absolutely. And this is, to me, actually, as we speak, the biggest issue. So we know, as you said, hundreds of thousands of people, and the providers are very, very different. So some providers are set up with multidisciplinary teams. You have a video chat with someone beforehand. The other, you literally put in some questions and they send you the drug, and you don't have to be truthful on those. Well, you should be truthful on those questions, but we know human nature, people want something. No one's checking. You don't have to give your GP knowledge that you're on these drugs. You get asked whether or not you want your GP to know. So we have a huge number of people who will vary across their BMI, who will vary across their psychological needs, and we somehow have to know how to manage this as GPs. One of the things that I have started to do is, if somebody comes in with quite significant GI issues and I can't pin it on anything, then what I'll often ask is, you know, a very matter-of-fact question: are you taking any weight loss medications at the moment? Weight stigma and that negative inner weight bias that people with obesity have means that very often they will not want to divulge that initially, and you have to make sure that they feel safe to give you that answer. The more matter-of-factly you answer it and say, I just really need to know because I need to know whether this could be related to your symptoms, that's the most important thing you can do, is to create a safe space for them to answer that question. But I've made it now a fairly routine part of my questioning. Now, I at the moment work more in an urgent treatment setting as a GP. If you are in a practice and you luckily get to know your patients a bit better, you will notice if somebody is suddenly a lot smaller than they used to be. And so again, it's worth just asking those questions in a very matter-of-fact way. You know, no judgment here, I just need to know to make sure that you're safe. And so I think what's true is that for the vast majority of those people, those symptoms will be short-lived. One of the things you can say is, right, okay, how about you go back to the dose you were on before? So people go up the dose every 4 weeks. It's a weekly injection, and each 4 weeks they increase the dose generally up to the maximum. And the side effects are very much dose related. So if they're struggling, then tell them to go back to the dose below. In an ideal world, people would have contacted their prescriber. In many of the situations, that is not an option because there is no one for them to talk to. And so I think what's really important is for GPs to not say, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you about this, I didn't give you the drug. Because although I completely feel for GPs that this isn't a drug they've initiated, they may not be expert about it. When you have a drug that hundreds of thousands of people in the UK are taking, we probably should know even a little bit. So It's worth just knowing the serious complications that you might need to look out for. The fact that if someone goes down back to the lower dose, their side effects might improve and they might still lose weight, because you don't have to go to the highest dose to lose weight. And so I think it's really important that we provide the safe space for them answering the question. We need to ask the question, and then we need to know a little bit about the doses, the fact that you can go back to the next one, etc., to be able to help people. I think that the importance of being aware, you don't have to be an expert, but you have to be aware that these things are out there and that we are skilled enough to know that we can suggest a few things. And it might be that we suggest stopping them, you know, that's always the option. And I should say that some of the good private providers will have somebody you can contact. That's important for me to say, but not all of them do. And unfortunately, my biggest fear is the people who are getting the compounded version. So it comes with a needle, syringe and a vial, like we get our drugs in meds, not in a nice pen. And those are the people that I worry about most, because I don't actually know what's in what they're taking. And so if those people come again, just ask the question, no judgment, but then you might have to be aware that possibly not the real thing.
Yeah, so I guess it's if patients, you know, we're very aware people are taking it privately, but to make sure they do due diligence and make sure it's an accredited provider with accredited prescribers. I think the key thing is GPs, you know, we're used to keeping up to date. This is a very quick evolving area. As you said, it's like the sort of research is coming out thick and fast, and I think we're going to see lots of potential changes in this space. So I think it's really important how we keep up to date. So yeah, about NICE guidance, SARSI GP will be having updated modules. I think looking out for our sort of hot topics that will come up in this area. And did you have any other sort of top tips and summing up key highlights?
I think for GPs, my best tips would be to learn the basics. You don't have to be an expert, but look at the NICE guidelines that have come out. The Lancet Commission on Obesity that's just come out was really fascinating. That's more about the diagnosis of obesity, but it's actually a really good learning point to know that obesity is not someone's relationship with gravity. It's not how much they weigh. It's the effect that that adipose tissue is having on their body. So that's the really important thing. And there is some interesting stuff about prescribing out there. It's getting more and more. I know the RCGP module is being done. I have an organization called All About Obesity. We've got some stuff about learning about side effects and how to manage those on there for patients, and healthcare professionals can access it for free if they wish. And I think that it's all about creating a safe space for the patient to answer the question, to remember to ask the question in a non-judgmental way, to know about the two medications we have at the moment and to know that they are dose increasing up to a maximum, that they are once a week, that generally the side effects are dose dependent. So you can go down back to the lower dose to try and improve that, and then they can go up again. They can stay at a lower dose for as long as they wish. You don't have to go up a dose. And I think then to learn about some of the rarer side effects, just so it goes into that memory bank we have of all those things we know where that little light bulb needs to ping so that we know that we need to ask something. And all of this information is so easily available online. Feel confident in just knowing about it. And I think then hopefully with time, we'll have GPs who are experts who might be in our local area we can ask. But for now, know about it. Don't just put your head in the sand and pretend it's not a thing. And we will be able to advise those patients who come in because they have no one else to ask.
As you rightly say, just ask that question. If you're worried, people got rapid weight loss, are you buying the weight loss medications online? That's really great. As I say, yeah, thank you for highlighting. We'll be looking at some future learning for the college. I think look out for your local medicines management. I know that's in my area, which is Northeast London. That debate and discussion's already underway about how we're going to potentially have access to these medications. And yeah, I think it's just about educating yourself, being aware of the changes that are going on and feeling reasonably confident and competent in these medications.
Absolutely. And I think really important, and I always say this, is that obesity as a topic and these medications as a topic have become a little bit of a dividing point. And what's really important is for everybody, whatever you're feeling about obesity, whatever you're feeling about whether people should take the medications, as a GP, we're all human, we all have different feelings, they are now going to be here. So we need and have a professional duty to learn about them, whether we like them or not. And we need to be able to advise our patients on those, and soon we may be asked to prescribe them. And so just check, if you feel uncomfortable about them, just check why that might be, and then take a good, you know, effort just to learn a bit about them. But I think, because this comes up every single time I teach about these drugs are not going away. They are here, they're here to stay. There are 19 different drugs in development at the moment, so they're not going anywhere, and we need to be open to learning about them for the benefit of our patients.
That's great. Thank you, Steph. And thank you so much. That's such a great discussion. As I say, we'll be very likely having updated RCGP online learning with the updated NICE guidelines, our regular hot topics on this area, where we keep you abreast of the latest research. And just to say thanks, Steph, for a wonderful discussion. And thank you all for listening to the RCGP podcasts.